Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Emily. I'm here with my co-host, Bailey, and we're here to bring you another exciting episode featuring inspiring Métis citizens from across our homelands. So this week, we are going to share one thing that we're looking forward to once we can gather again. So Bailey, did you want to start us off?
One thing I'm looking forward to?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to be able to go to music concerts again and to be in a big crowd without being terrified. So
yeah, that's exciting. Me too. I never thought about that one. I'm most looking forward to hugs. I like hate this awkward, like wanting to hug people, but like can't sort of thing. So
yeah, no, yeah. That's a good one.
Thank you. But did you want to go ahead and introduce today's guest?
Absolutely. So today our guest is Elder Doreen Burgum. So, born into an era when it was illegal to express one's Métis culture, Doreen Burgum has become an inspiration to Métis people. Doreen dove into her culture at 55 when laws changed. She learned music, dances, and handicrafts secretly shared in her childhood. Currently, Doreen is the Métis elder for the homeland of the Métis Nation of Alberta, Region 3, and an internationally recognized jigger. She shares her culture with students in schools, colleges, and universities, and creates storyboards and museum displays. Through her prayers, beading, and jigging, she has, one event at a time and one person at a time, fostered understanding of and pride in the Métis culture, locally, nationally, and internationally. Doreen is a strong Métis advocate, and we are so excited to have her on the podcast today.
Yay! So welcome, Doreen.
Yeah, welcome.
Hello!
Hi!
How are you?
How are you doing? I'm good.
That's awesome. Good to hear.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us, Doreen. We're really happy to have you on and glad that you were able to join us via Zoom here. So can you tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up as Métis? Any childhood memories that might come to mind when you think about your childhood and what growing up was like and where you grew up and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. My parents were Mary Vanesse and Ambrose Dumont. And they got married in St. Paul de Métis on, I think it was May 3rd, 1937. They were both Métis and started their life up in that area. And so my grandpa Pete was one of the ones that received script land. And he gave my parents, for a wedding gift, a piece of land to farm, but they couldn't make a go of it. So they heard of work down in the Sundry area. So there was four Métis families, the Pichés, the Tremblays, Dumonts, and Quins, I believe, that came from Kikino in the back of a big grain truck. They came to Innisfail first, and then they settled in Sundry. And they all got jobs working there. My dad was in logging. There was logging and ranching and all sorts of jobs there for Métis families, for Métis people. And it turned out that there was probably, that was in 1943. And in my family, we had a family of 10, and I was number 6.
Wow.
So as we view the 10 in my family, three of us were born beautiful golden brown skin. And they're the ones that had the most discrimination, the more harassment with our nationality. And of course, when I was young, everybody called us half-breeds. And they made us ashamed of the color of our skin and also our nationality. But that wasn't everybody. You know, the town of Sundry, they had the good ones and the bad ones. And we actually all looked after each other, because there was probably about 35 Métis families who worked and lived in the Sundry area. And of course, they called. We were all on the Bergen Road, and my family was a Rotelands Métis. We settled on a piece of land. It was Crown land between the ditch and the river. And we had lived there for, I think it was close to 10 years, and I'm not sure what the squatter's rights are, or they might have changed, they might not have. But at that time, we were getting close to being there 10 years, And if you stayed there 10 years, and then that land would become yours as a squatter. But in the meantime, there was a resident of Sundry that didn't like us living there. And he tried to burn our house down. So what my dad did after that happened, no one got hurt. And my dad bought a schoolhouse because of all the kids. He needed a schoolhouse to to live in. And it was actually pretty neat. And he moved it on to an acre of land closer to Sundry. And there was still the maps. I don't know if it's probably past your day, but when you went to school, they had these maps of Canada. And there was chocolate bars advertising on each corner of the map. Like they're the full big maps. And the blackboards were even on the walls. And all the records from the school was there. It was an old country school. But my dad rebuilt the inside and formed rooms and kitchen and a sleeping area. And our upstairs, they put an upstairs in there. And it was all one room for all of us. And there was three kids to a bed. So we slept very close. But my parents would sure miss someone if they weren't there. Yeah, most of the Métis found working and logging farms, ranches, anything they could find to make a living. But my parents were also artists. They did sewing, beading, moccasin making, working with leather and weaving. And that's my biggest regret. I never sat down with my mom to bead and learn all of these things. And I was born with a gift of jigging and dance. And I could not practice my dance until I was 55 years old.
Wow.
Lived in Calgary, and I didn't even know how good I was. I didn't know how bad I was. But my mom and I joined the Métis Nation of Alberta region in 3. And that's when I could do my jigging.
You were 55 when you competed first, or when you just started jigging?
No, when I competed.
Okay.
No, because through all the, the Métis people worked hard all week at logging and farming and ranching. And at the end of the week, they would celebrate. They would literally throw out the furniture. And they'd bring in food and spoons, fiddle, guitars, all the singers and dancers, and just to get to that floor to do their Red River Jig, their Drops of Brandy, all our cultural dances, because my mom was the champion jigger.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And she was out of Onion Lake, Saskatchewan.
So was that a lot of your weekends as a child? Was like big gatherings, big kitchen parties and stuff like that?
Absolutely. That's where they found their joy, speaking their language, because it was against the law for them to speak their language and practice their culture. But, after hiding in plain sight for all these years, and they could finally at their gatherings, because they had to put curtains over the window or blankets when they were dancing, when they were cutting up a moose or an elk or a deer. And of course, they would share with all the families. Because there was no deep freezes. All we had was a well. And to keep butter and milk, my mom she put a rope on the end of a pail and put the butter or milk way down deep in the well to keep it cool.
It's like an underground freezer, kind of?
Sort of. Yeah. It was quite deep, so it was cold down there.
Yeah. I also heard, too, one time that that's why that people jig with they are not supposed to move their arms, is because that was how they used to hide from the cops.
Yeah, for sure.
You couldn't move your upper body, so they wouldn't see you through the window.
Now it's something like Zoom.
Yeah, now we have Zoom. Yeah. My legs are going. Just kidding. That sounds awesome though. Those are a lot of really positive memories for the most part, I guess, right? Like really relied on the kinship and the people you had close to you, hey,
absolutely.
Sounds like, to get through.
Yeah. And there was no elders in our community because, it was against the law for the Métis to practice their culture. That's why they came so close to look after each other. Mm-hmm. And so our grandparents, our aunts and uncles, they could discipline us at any time and it would be okay. Because if they caught somebody else's kid doing something or stealing or telling lies, it mm-hmm. was okay to discipline them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I always say our parents, they taught us how to work with our hands, head, and heart. And I always tell the youth, find your gift, practice it, share it. Our Métis culture is worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
When you were younger, you said there was some of your siblings received more discrimination than others. What was your experience like?
My experience? Well, it wasn't as bad as the other three. And my brother, Bruce, he always, because we liked dancing so much and because our family was so big with cousins and we'd all go to community dances. And there was always a dance on the weekend surrounding Sundry, like at James River, Harmattan, Co-op. And the one at Harmattan, the people from Olds, it's really ironic that I was born in Olds. And this is a place where I received most of my discrimination. And now I'm back here. I think God works in mysterious ways. And I've come back to get our respect back that we deserve, not only in town, but in the churches.
Mm-hmm. I wonder why. You honestly, you kind of hear that a lot. Hey, like, I know in communities, I feel like where there's a high Indigenous population or a high Métis population, that those are the communities that have the most racism. And in my head, that seems really backwards because it's, if you're exposed to that culture on the daily, like you should have respect for it, but it always seems to be the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was always with a relative or one of my siblings. So I was kind of protected.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what you do is you develop your own, shield and your own armor. Our parents taught us how to respect ourselves, and we weren't going out that door without a clean face, clean hands, clean neck, because they used to check us at school, check our hands and our face and our neck and our ears to see how clean we were. And
so weird.
Yeah, and so we've taken that to you know, looking for a job. I don't know if I was ever refused a job because of my nationality, but we were hiding in plain sight. That's what we had to do to create the shield and just to defend yourself. Because when you walk out that door, you had to be in perfect shape, perfect dress. And you'll see in all the old pictures how the Métis were very dressed up, well-dressed.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was a sewer, so... But when I was little, I was pretty chubby. I don't know if I ate all the bannock or what I did. When I was five, she'd get our clothing from the Sally Ann or thrift store and remake them. And so she would, for a plaid skirt, a pleated plaid skirt, she had to put a camisole or a slip, a half slip, attach it to the skirt so I could keep my dress up. And then I had to put a blouse or a little sweater over top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't fall apart.
So growing up, did you ever have the desire to pretend like you weren't Métis, to hide it because of some of the things that you would face? Or was it always something you knew that you had to just deal with because you were proud of who you were, kind of thing?
Well, especially in school, you know. I think because our name was Dumont and a French name, we could pass as French, except for my dark brown siblings. Yeah, that was what you had to do. You had to hide in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. How did that impact you now? Like, was there a lot of feelings when you got older, when you started jigging in competitions and stuff, where you regretted that? Or is it just what you had to do to get by? Or...
That's what I had to do to get by, because I went to work for ABB Vetco Gray, Canada Inc. And I stayed there 16 years. Awesome. But I was well received in the industry, and my job was office manager as well as accounts receivable back in the 80s and 90s. And when I retired, I took, I think there was seven of us gals with CNRL, and I took them out for lunch when I was retiring. And you're not going to believe this. I had worked with those girls probably 16 years. And five of us were Métis, and we finally came out and discussed it.
Holy!
And that was in 2007.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's what was it like raising your kids with that, like always hiding that you were Métis, but knowing you were Métis. Like, did you instill pride in them, or was it kind of the same thing of like, if you don't have to admit it,
at a point,
it'll be easier.
You know, when they were younger. No, we didn't acknowledge it then. Mm-hmm. But as I got older and into the Métis community, then I thought, well, everybody calls me an Indian. I might as well be an Indian.
May as well enjoy it, hey?
I might as well enjoy it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And then maybe like, yeah, I guess on the more positive side of things, what are some things that you love about being Métis? Like, what are some stories that you remember as a kid of that just really made you feel alive in your culture?
Well, our parents did all of the crafting. That was part of it, and the dancing and the food. I think it was the spirit of our culture. Mm-hmm. Because not one of us can sit still when the music is playing. But I was very fortunate that my parents, they taught us how to, you know, they taught us honesty and respect, how to respect ourselves and love and sharing and caring, courage, balance, patience, strength. They kept us close.
Yeah.
To this day, I still thank God for my parents. That's whenever awesome. I go out in my shield, my armor, you know, when I go to university or when I go different places to say a prayer. And that's why I dressed up as a Kukum on last Saturday when I was jigging, because a lot of people have this image of an elder, especially a woman, you know, to come in there with a shawl and a scarf. Mm-hmm. And I said, one of these days I'm going to just put my shawl on and my scarf and just hobble up to the podium to say my prayer and then just rip it all off.
You did. I actually did watch that too. And I was like, I didn't recognize you because it was your back. And I was like, who is that? And then you just ripped it all off and started jigging. It was awesome.
I had fun. It was time to do that.
Oh, that was awesome though. Yeah, so obviously you really, really love dancing. That's awesome. Oh, and yes. I think too, like the aspect of community, and we've talked about this with our guests in the past, with Paul last week too, just about how essentially like community and kinship and our ties. You said like your aunties, they raised you. Like I think that's what helped our people survive essentially, is just leaning on each other. And so like, what did you learn? What did you learn from having that many people raise you, having an entire community discipline you and make you the person you are today?
Well, you were always part of community. Like even when we went to Lake St. Anne, that was our yearly holiday. And my dad would put willows over the back of the truck and put a canvas over top and throw in 10 kids, a tent, our grub box, our bedding, our clothing. And away we'd go to Lake St. Anne from Sundry, meeting all the relatives, like from the northeastern Alberta, Lac La Biche, Kikino, and all of the relatives that would come to Lake St. Anne. That was such a joy for my parents, not only spiritually, but there they could speak their language with their relatives and enjoy their food, you know, share their dry meat or their fish, their white fish, and it was just a wonderful visit, as well as having the spiritual aspect of it.
And how long did you usually stay there for?
Usually, it probably took us a week.
Yeah.
Take us 2 days to get there with that load, rain or shine. And then probably 2 days to get back.
Yeah.
You know, back in those days. That's why I was, and at Lake St. Anne, I was always concerned. How come my family never gets asked to take up the bread, to take up the gifts to the altar? And so when my husband passed away, I set major goals for myself every year. And 2017, I thought, I am going to become a Eucharistic minister, and I am going to give our people at Lake St. Anne communion. And it's been such a joy, because I'm sure going to miss it this year.
Lake St. Anne.
But it's been a joy, especially with the children, when you see all these little people. They remind me of myself, like, you know, just roaming around the church and just really free. And this one little gal, she might have been 6 or 5. She came up to me and she said, "What are you giving those people anyway?" She said, "I want some of that." I said, "Oh my goodness, my girl." I said, "You can't have any of this because I don't think you've had your first communion. But I want you to make me a promise." I said, "Just cross your arms and I'll bless you. And you go home and you get your first communion and you come back next year. And then I'll give you some. I'll give you some communion." But it was so funny, and it just shocks me every time. And then, was it last year, this one little gal came up to me. She was about 10. And she had come through once. And she said to me, "My grandma said I could have another one." And of course, there's 100 people behind her. And I said, "Oh my goodness, no, you can't have another one." I said, "Look at all these people. You already had one. So what I want you to do is, there's another mass at 3 o'clock. You go back to church and then you can have another one there." So it's just the joy of the kids. Yeah.
So how do you see Métis youth then, like that, like children and youth, even mine and Emily's age, as we move forward, impacting our nation, like impacting the Métis nation as a whole?
Oh my goodness. I am so proud of our youth this day and age. And I believe it's our education that's coming forward. On one of my 7 sacred teachings, it says here how the Métis, they love to live in balance, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And it's very important to keep that balance. And this is where patience, strength, kindness, and tolerance is going to come in to play with the strength of education for our youth to speak their mind, give their opinion, and to be heard and let their voice stand for the Métis Nation and their people. And I just love being around the youth, because I guess I'm a kid at heart myself, but just the joy and the spirit is what brings me to the youth. And I think it's so important that the youth realize we're all born with a gift. And hopefully the aunts and uncles and the kookums and mooshums will help the youth find their gift and learn about their culture, the Métis culture, and carry it on for generations to come. But I am very proud of the youth that are getting educated and learning how to deal with racism and their culture, to be proud of who they are. So moving forward, we're going to be in good shape. You know, all the youth get educated and stand up for their culture.
Yeah, you see, and we've talked about this before with some of our other guests, it feels and you see a lot more pride in our culture and in the generations that are coming up. And I think that's huge in moving forward, especially with our self-government, is you have to be prideful in who you are in, right? So I think it's really empowering to see everybody like just be so prideful of who they are and to reach out to our elders and stuff and to try to learn that knowledge and to just keep our culture going, and we're not hiding it anymore. And I think it's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And during this COVID, I went, were you there, Bailey, in Ottawa at the women's meeting?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I came home, and then they said that, and I'd been to a few meetings here, and then they sent out that letter that COVID was present where we were at.
Yeah.
And you'd have to stay home for 14 days. Well, I thought, that's nothing new for the Métis. We're used to hiding in plain sight. Look at all the bread makers and the bannock makers that COVID has produced.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of survival.
I have to admit, I had all this time and I still did not improve my bannock making skills. So,
well, it'll come.
One of these days.
Maybe that's your gift. You got to practice.
Yeah, I got to practice some more.
I have been making a lot of bread.
Have you? Yeah, you have been making a lot of bread. You've been doing good.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I used to make bread and cinnamon buns. In fact, my mom did as well every Friday until I put on about 30 pounds and work it off. So that's when I quit making bread.
So you had to go do some work outside. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you want to share a couple stories or what works best for you?
Oh, I can share a couple stories.
Okay.
When we were on the road allowance and on one particular day, September 25th, 1950, my young sister passed away. She had spinal meningitis. And on that same day, I always say my parents lost two kids in one day. My brother Leo, we have an eye condition in our family. It's called congenital nystagmus. And at that time, the town of Sunbury decided they would send my brother Leo to the blind school in Brantford, Ontario. So on September 25th, 1950, we lost my sister. And then my parents put Leo on the train out of Olds. He was 10 years old to go to school in Brantford, Ontario.
That's far away from home.
Oh, for sure. And he went back and forth for 4 years. And then he had to come home and start all over again in school, in regular school, because they taught him Braille.
Yeah.
So he wasn't that bad off that, he could manage without it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then another time, my dad, I think I was only maybe 6 or 7. My dad got TB, and then he was in the sanatorium in Calgary for, oh, heavens, well over a year. And then during that time, my mom got sick. And she had to go to the hospital in Olds. And the town of Sundry, they took all us kids and mothered us for about 3 weeks, I think my mom was in the hospital for. But after that recovery, my mom came home and she was just like a hen, a mother hen, gathering her children.
Aww.
Yeah, it was so important. You know, you heard of the 60 scoop, you heard of all of this. And she was not going to have her family split up
mm-hmm.
or any of her children taken away.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that's awesome that you guys, you came out together, right? Like that's honestly, as sad as it is, a rare story that you hear a positive result, right?
Right, for sure. But my mother never did drink and she was very strong, mm-hmm. a very determined woman. The Hutterites tried to sell her. I don't know if it was 100 pounds or 50 pounds of potatoes, and she didn't believe them. So she made him dump the sack of potatoes on the ground, and sure enough, there was rocks in the bottom. So she went through a
lot. She was quick, yeah.
Yeah, but she was very determined to keep her family together.
It's amazing. We are coming up here. I have about 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
Well, say our prayer, if I can get it in.
If you want to go ahead and say your prayer and your advice to Métis youth, and then we'll say our goodbyes.
Oh, okay. God, our creator, we thank you for guiding our leaders and elders to finally get recognized as a Métis nation in our Canada. Today, we walk tall with gratitude and great pride in the spirit and footsteps of our ancestors. April 16th, 2016. Recognizing the Métis Nation as its own culture and identity, Métis people were finally citizens in our Canada. June 27th, 2019, Alberta Métis Nation signs self-government agreement with Ottawa. Bless our Métis flag, which symbolizes our ancestry of Aboriginal and European cultures. Bless the infinity symbol, that suggests the Métis people will exist forever. Bless our fiddle and our feet so we can continue to share our dance. Red River Jig, Duck Dance, the Reel of Four, and the Drops of Brandy. Bless our Machif language, one of 20 indigenous languages to be saved. Bless our anthem and the true story it tells of the Métis people. Bless our hands, head, and heart so we can continue to pass on the art of beading, painting, embroidery, sewing, and moccasin making. Bless our sash. Help us to honor and protect our sash for future generations. Bless our veterans for their service and commitment to our Canada. God, our Creator, as we move forward, help our children and youth find the balance between past and present, in tradition and spirit. Be proud of your heritage. Our Métis culture is worth it.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah. And thank you so much for calling in with us and chatting and sharing your stories and all that stuff today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you girls.
Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Keeping It Real. We'll catch you next week for our next Métis Monday.